Good afternoon. My name is Ryan Funk, here with you on UMFM. Welcome to UTalk. It's a program dedicated to diversity, where we highlight native-born and new Canadians' cultures and experiences. In this episode, we talked with Adolfo Cutera on adapting to life in Canada using paleontology. The group Asian Women in Winnipeg discussed multiculturalism in Canada, and Sonia Lundstrom speaks on connecting to a culture an ocean away. Starting life in a new country is a challenge. I can't even begin to comprehend how difficult that must be. For the executive director of the Canadian Fossil Discovery Center, Adolfo Cutera, paleontology was the perfect avenue to adjust to his new life, even though his English skills weren't well developed.
My background related to paleontology or dinosaurs, I started to work with dinosaurs in 1998 in a big project. Well, actually, it's the biggest project about dinosaurs, about paleontology in Europe. It's a small museum and amusement park in Spain. It's Dinopolis. I was lucky enough to be part of the team from the beginning. I started to work there just like 2 years before the building was finally built. My very first job with dinosaurs was to go an expedition to Colorado in 1988 to excavate a whole dinosaur there for the project. So the local government paid for a dinosaur in the States. The dinosaur was still in the ground, and we have to go there and excavate it for in 2 different years, 1998 and 1999. So that's my very first job. And after that, I was involved totally in the project with designing all the exhibitions and assembling the exhibitions and organizing the coordination of all the exhibitions in the project. So I was working there like 2 years just focused in this project. And after that, I was the main provider for paleontological resources for Dinopolis during 20 years more.
So what kind of spurred that movement to move here to Canada?
In 2012 was the year when we decided to move from Spain. Probably was the year, even the year where I had more work with this staff with dinosaurs in Spain, but my wife was a civil servant in Spain. But we were really tired of so many things everything. It was like, I could give you like 500 reasons to do this. Even it was probably my better professional moment that way, but I didn't care. I remember one day I told my wife, probably we have to move. And she told me, that's fine. We can do that. So we started to, a huge research. Actually, we were for more than 2 years, because we were not in a hurry as well. So, but we were looking for a place to go. Canada always likes for many reasons, but at that time I had a job offer from the States because two paleontologists I knew, Martin Lockley is the most famous paleontologist in dinosaur footprints. Another American police paleontologist. Both were the scientific directors of a new project in Moab, in Utah. It's Moab Giants. and is already working at that museum, and they wanted to hire me to be part of the team. But so at the beginning, I was looking a little bit about the States because of that. But I mean, I wasn't very convinced. So I was like keeping in mind that project, but we decided to move to Canada even without expectations of any kind. I mean, I didn't have anything here. So we came by ourselves without any kind of help. And we were looking for a place, and we were really searching all Canada, across Canada. We were looking for a few requirements, but the two most important requirements were college or university for my wife, something related to paleontology. So we were looking for Nova Scotia, we're looking for Vancouver Island, a few places. But for many reasons, we decided that this area, more than Winkler, was the best for us. We wanted a rural area. We are not interested in big cities. And we have the Red River College in Winkler, where my wife studied business administration there. We have the Canadian Fossil Discovery Center. So we came in 2015, with no expectations at all. So during the first 2 years, we were looking to obtain the permanent residence. We were working on it, but contacting with the Canadian Fossil at the beginning. I was working a few years as a volunteer here. My wife is studying in the Red River College. We have a son and a daughter as well. And finally, here we are.
Describe kind of that transitional period when you were looking for places in both the United States and Canada. How did you feel you adjusted to life here?
To say, we are very realistic persons. I mean, we have the skills to see very well the reality. So we were trying to know how it would be to be here, what the chances to progress and to go ahead would be. I think we did well because, I mean, we didn't have big surprises here. So we thought that we really matched very well how would be to live here. After a little bit more than 5 years we were living here. Almost everything was like we thought at the beginning. So we really didn't think about adaptation or progress. I mean, it was like came here and everything was fine. I mean, no surprises at all. The people, the community, the culture, everything was something that we felt that we already knew about that. So everything was fine, really.
Did you find that there were services and people within the community, maybe even other newcomers, that helped you adjust and, you know, come into the community of Morden Winkler?
No, we really didn't receive any help because we were not looking for help. I mean, just everything. We like to do everything by ourselves. So we started to make friends. We are almost the only people from Spain here. I know we are another guy living in Winkler, but we don't have any connections with the Spanish community. In Winnipeg, there are a lot of Spanish people. But, all our friends are Canadians born in the area. So we are really happy, I mean, with the relation we have with the people. Everything is really, really good.
And you mentioned before that you had come to the States to help get that dinosaur fossil. But tell me a little bit about, was there any troubles, you know, working in the field of paleontology, any language barriers or that at the beginning or even maybe even now?
No, yeah, for sure. I mean, probably it's the most difficult probably for me, no, for my wife. My wife works all day long by phone with dealers in the States and in Ontario and Vancouver. So, yeah, I never was good for languages, probably. So I remember in 1998 was my first time in North America. So it was really challenging because, I mean, my language skills were really low. So, but it was a very, very good experience. I mean, it was one of the best experiences I have in my life. So right now, still the language is a little challenging all the time, but I mean, I am going ahead with all the projects, all the daily challenges, and I'm okay. I mean, I need that kind of demanding, you know, a story, because if not, this everything will be very boring. So I need something demanding to do everything every day.
Yeah, keep yourself busy all the time. Do you have any advice or words of encouragement for newcomers that are coming to Canada and are wanting to get into, you know, the field of either paleontology or some other sciences? Do you have any words that you'd like to share with them?
Well, this world is actually very small. I mean, the world of paleontology in all around the world is small. It works very, very similar in every. It doesn't matter. This is in Germany, in Spain, in the States, in Canada, in Australia. I feel that the environment about the people working in paleontology is all the same. We have all the same problems, the same challenge. So for me, it was very helpful to be inside this world of the paleontology, the fossils, because it makes me feel comfortable, because it's not different at the thing where I was doing in Spain or wherever. So it's like a little strange for all people around, because normally people don't understand what is that thing about dinosaur or paleontology. But for me, when I took this position as executive director here in the museum, is like something very familiar for me, because I am in my environment totally. I mean, making the management, everything is like the same I used to do before. So I can say that paleontology was the perfect match to come here, because it's like doing the same thing.
The CFDC recently celebrated its 50th anniversary and continues to work on a project to build a standalone facility. According to Statistics Canada, in the 2016 census, 21.9% of the population reported they were or had ever been a landed immigrant or permanent resident in Canada. This proportion is close to the 22.3% recorded during the 1921 census, the highest level since Confederation. This shows how diversity in Canada continues to grow and won't be slowing down. But that's just raw data. What does multicultural look like and feel for those moving here? The Asian women of Winnipeg share their thoughts on the matter.
Namaste, bonjour. Je m'appelle Lakshika et aujourd'hui on a parlé à propos au EWAL et multiculturalism au Canada. My name is Lakshika. I am a youth ambassador of EWAL. And today we're going to talk about multiculturalism in Canada. Today we have Sadia and Jamila with us in the studio. And thank you, You Multicultural, for giving us the opportunity to talk about things that are important to us. We'll probably start with Sadia. You are the secretary of AWOL. So in today's day and age, how do you think a society like AWOL is important?
I really do believe in power of women, first of all. Not that I'm biased to my own sex, but women truly are resilient. We are multitaskers, and we're the ones mostly teaching our young ones how to do, and you know, from ABC to when they're all grown. So I really do believe in that women need to be more involved, especially women who are, you know, immigrants or coming from anywhere else in Canada. That's why our organization came about, and we're still going.
That's beautiful.
Many more to come.
Hopefully, yes, for sure. Yes. So one of your annual events is Women's Day. And what impact do you think that event makes on our society?
So how that event actually started happening was that we have a lot of talent in our community. Community meaning immigrant women who have made it from zero to now they are very successful. Yeah. They have made a name for themselves. And we wanted to show our youth that and give them that opportunity to see the accomplishments of these women and someday give them a stage so they can see themselves on that stage. You know? Picture a dream that someday I will get that. Yeah. Or I will be there.
Yeah.
So it was truly, it started there, and we are still going. It was our fifth year this year. So yay.
Yes.
And I hope that it evolves and grows and we'll see many more women of our own descent.
Yes.
Coming up. Yes.
Also, I've noticed that AWOL not only promotes women, but it also promotes diversity. So mm-hmm. one of your events was our events. Mm-hmm. One of our events was Lori. So it's because, I mean, it is a big thing because Lori is basically a festival that's celebrated in India. But the fact that we got a chance to do it in Winnipeg says a lot. Mm-hmm. So how do you think it was, you know, important?
So what actual Lori is, it is a cultural festival.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that only boys were celebrated. When boys were born, they were celebrated and you know, parents or relatives would spread, like give away sweets and they would just, you know, flowers and all of that. So what came about is we're giving a stage to people and saying, having daughters does require celebrating.
Yeah.
So whoever does that, they come up on stage for free. There's no charge for mm-hmm. it. Truly the message behind is to celebrate your boys and girls.
Yeah.
In our community. It is a Punjabi festival, but many other people from other faiths or cultures do celebrate.
Yeah.
And the part of it is fun.
Yeah.
That's what Asian Women of Winnipeg does. We want to teach our young ones and the older ones, but keep it fun. Keep it just very light, and we're not saying rah-rah about anything,
mm-hmm.
but we're very casually just sliding that information through that, you know, we're all worth celebrating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where Lori started.
That's a beautiful, beautiful message. Even I did not know a lot of that background. So I know that one of the recent events that we did was Desi Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you think it you know, turned out and what kind of inspired you to do it? Because it's different than other events that we have done before.
Yes.
That's for sure. So how do you think Desi Fest kind of came about to be?
So after one of our board meetings, me, Sharon, who's the president, I think one more board member, it was Dalinder. Uh-huh. We were just casually talking, and as Sharon has older kids, I have teenage kids, and we were just talking about how our kids are very further away from their culture, and there's a gap which is building mm-hmm. between their grandparents, like our parents, and them.
Yeah.
Maybe technology is the way to do it, or them not being in a collective environment. They're not being exposed. They just go to school. And then a lot of us have older parents
yeah.
here living with their family. They do not get to have the same interaction with their grandchildren.
Yeah.
And talking about that, it just led to that we're seeing a lot of mental illness in all our teens, a lot of anxiety, which is just being suppressed and they're not talking about it. And our older, talent, I call them talent, yeah. grandparents, they have lived a life. They know a lot more about this world and how to live it
yeah.
than us. And we should be using that. We should be using those resources and bridging that gap between our young ones and our older ones, so they can both enjoy this new world that we're living in. Because to them, technology is a stigma. They cannot, they don't know how to maneuver that.
Yeah.
So that's where we thought, hey, how can we do it? Yeah. It needs to be multicultural. It needs to. We need to show that we're not very different than each other. And difference isn't such a bad thing.
Yeah.
Difference is actually a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And next thing we know, we contacted Terry Duguid. We contacted a few of other, Janice Morley, that, you know, because they have connections in the community.
Yeah.
And this wonderful lady, that's how we met her. And many other community. It was overwhelming. We weren't expecting the kind of
response
yeah. from the community. And everybody was just, yay, let's yeah. do it. Everybody was on board.
Yeah.
And I'm talking, these are people who are not being compensated
yeah.
anything in return yeah. other than just showcase their culture and be proud of that and their heritage
yeah.
and say that this is what I carry and that's where I'm from.
Yeah.
How cool is that? And our kids relate to that.
Exactly.
You know, I'm cool and I'm hip.
Yeah.
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 So that's why that came into place. And it was a success.
Yeah.
I must say, I have not seen that many people from that many, that much talent.
Yeah.
It was just overwhelming.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You were there.
Yeah. Especially right? like, I liked how it was also one of a kind, because we weren't just catering to words, although that is also a beautiful thing in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But we also, you know, it was kind of like it was the world under one roof.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just one community, but it
yes.
was, there were performances and discussions and people from so many mm-hmm. different backgrounds that it kind mm-hmm. of made the event such a beautiful place and such a beautiful event in itself, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
I never knew what Rangoli was until I got involved with this organization.
Yeah.
And first time when we celebrated Lori, that's when I found out that wonderful art of colors,
yeah.
how they do it. And little kids learning that was yeah. Such a treat.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful experience. And it's things like that bring us closer to each other.
Yeah.
To see each other's cultures and see how beautiful we are
yeah.
is just it's Canada.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful country full of beautiful people,
yeah.
all immigrants from different parts of the world,
yeah.
some being happy here or some didn't actually want to be here, but still happened to be here,
yeah.
Right? So, yes.
That's beautiful. And I like how you talked about kids making rangoli. And, you know, a lot of things that we learn as kids kind of stay with us, whether we think about it or not. So what was your childhood like? Or what were, like, some memories that, you know, have stayed with you?
So I'll tell you, my childhood memories are of Aladdin. We used to read the books, and what most people will say that I want to go to New York, yeah, and see the buildings and all of that. My childhood was full of, I used to tell my dad that I wanted to go to Baghdad.
Yeah.
Why? It was this mesmerizing stories that I dread. Okay. And obviously back then we were pretty far away from, our parents kept us away from the news and all the horrible things that were going. It's more so in the media everywhere. We only had the TV in our days.
Yeah.
And when I came here and found many, many things, and I was devastated.
Yeah.
That I'll never get to experience that. And then slowly when I integrated into the community, I met someone who was from Iraq, and that's why I enjoy doing this. I get to still eat that food. Yeah. I get to still meet people who wear those clothes. Yeah. I cannot go to Iraq, yeah, but I can still experience it.
Through those people.
Through those people, yeah. Yes.
We'll now also talk to our youth ambassador of Asian Women of Winnipeg, and we've worked together for the AC Fest, so I know she's a beautiful, beautiful person. Although I know a lot about you, but let's just, you know, share your experiences. Let's start with, were you born in Canada?
No, I was not. I was born in a refugee camp in Syria. So my family was originally from Iraq as well. We fled Iraq to Syria and then came to Canada as refugees in 1999.
Ooh. Yeah. After you came here, how did Canada and how did the people here treat you, and how was the whole experience? Like, were you welcomed, and how was that?
Yeah, so I was pretty young when we came over.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, we can see that now when newcomer kids and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Kind of like sponges.
Yeah.
They pick everything up right away.
Yeah.
I think the issue really lies with the older generation who come here.
Yeah.
You know, like 40 plus.
Yeah.
Who are coming and have a lot harder time adjusting to the culture and the language and the weather. Although those things are hard for everyone, I find it's an extra burden on those who come when they're a bit older.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to learn things from scratch.
Yeah.
And I find that's where you see a bit of the conflict with the younger kids and then their parents. And then you have those little clashes because mm-hmm. you're like, why can't you understand? This is how
yeah.
they do it here. And they say, well, we've been doing it this way for 50 years.
Yeah.
And it's that clash of culture, right?
Yeah.
So I guess my biggest thing was always trying to find a middle ground with my parents and my community and trying to mold it really slowly
yeah.
into the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Right? So that was my experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like how
still
you
is.
Said
yeah,
yeah. that you were young. And I can actually attest to because I remember everything when I came here, because I was much older. I was 14 years old when I came here. And so I remember like everything. And
yeah.
so it's like you live in one place. So I lived in New Delhi, India for 14 years. Then
yeah.
I came here. And the most beautiful part of it all was that I expected differences. It's going to be different. That's all I had actually envisioned.
Yeah.
And when I came here, I was like, I don't feel the difference.
Yeah.
And that's when I actually realized that, you know, when you live in a certain place for quite some time, you start to think that, you know, well, I live here, so we're probably one of a kind. People don't think like us.
Yeah.
And I was amazed by how beautiful it is to, and I like, now I'm such a fan of actually moving to places, because when I lived there, I was like, I don't want to go anywhere. But now that I was here, and I realized that the only thing that connects us all is that we're humans, and is that we go through things and we experience them. And so it's like those differences that I always thought we had, they never I never experienced them. So moving on, in terms of opportunities, do you think Canada provides those opportunities that are required, that are needed for new immigrants? Do you think that they are, that we have opportunities in Canada for new people?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, just like to point out that Canada was actually the country who welcomed the most amount of refugees in 2018.
Yeah.
So good for Canada. You beat out every other country. So yeah, opportunities wise, I think, I'll just speak to Winnipeg. I know just in the last 2 years, there's been so many different programs through settlement agencies and different organizations coming together to create opportunities for newcomers, refugees, migrants, everyone who fits under that umbrella.
Yeah.
Also, I'd like to point out that, you know, newcomers, asylum seekers, refugees, migrants are completely different things. They all have different types of stories, although they all come from a different country to Canada. Yeah. That journey is completely different. So just like to put that in there. So yeah, definitely lots of opportunities all across the board, though, in terms of people coming from different countries trying to start a new life, a better life, whether they're fleeing war, just trying to come here to find, you know, job opportunities, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
I think Canada definitely provides those opportunities. I mean, we can always do better, right?
Yeah.
But I think we're doing pretty good right now.
Beautiful. Yeah. And of course, like I said, you're a youth ambassador in AOL. And how do you think the youth is important? And how do you think the youth plays a role in our society? Because I remember I was reading that the UN Secretary General, he stated that, a quote unquote, that it's time we take a seat in your table. Because I think it's a time where, you know, we're talking about global warming, climate change. And he kind of pointed out that, you know, some things that our adults have missed out on, the youth is really quick at pointing that out. And so how do you think the youth is important, because it is important. How do you think it plays a role in our society? A role.
I think the role we play is huge.
Yeah.
I think, like you were saying earlier, about, you know, youth, when people say youth are the future, but it's like, no, we're really leading right now.
Yeah.
If you look at tech sectors and different things like that, it's mostly young people leading these different industries. I mean, if you look at the climate movement, it's like Greta Thunberg. Like, she's a 16-year-old girl leading, like, the world.
Yeah.
Leading, really, the world on this, like, you know, we need action right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 16-year-old girl, right? And different fields, I mean, like, even on refugees and newcomers. I'm 23 years old and I've been so passionate about this issue forever, and now to be the leader of my own community and, you know, really promoting that. I think like the local, the national, and the international stage, you see youth everywhere. So really, we need to just pull up a seat at the grown-up table and be like, listen, this is going to affect us for years to come. No more nothing about us without us.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the youth definitely are playing a huge role.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And I like how also you pointed out that, you know, we are not the future. We're kind of already here, and, you know, these things are going to impact us in the long run. So with that, we're going to conclude today's discussion. And I, first of all, want to say thank you to You Multicultural and then these beautiful ladies, Sadia and Jamila, for such an enlightening experience, and I feel like I learned a lot, and hopefully you guys learned something and had fun, and we'll probably see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you. try.
We've shared the stories of people who were immigrants, bringing their culture with them as they built a new life here in the land of maple leaves. Sonja Lundström is the president of the Swedish Cultural Association of Manitoba, a part of the Scandinavian Culture Center of Winnipeg, which is a volunteer-driven organization with members joining clubs of the five Nordic countries, Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Norway, and Sweden. Although born in Canada, Sonja feels her Scandinavian ancestry deep within her soul.
I was born and raised in Red Lake, Ontario, where my mother ventured up there as a cook in 1939. And because she was from an Icelandic family of 13, and they all had to go make money, she had been working at the Union Starcars restaurant, found she could make double the money in a mining town. And so she got all the clothes and she had to go by taxi to Lac Da Vang, and then she had to fly by bush plane into Red Lake. And when she landed there, her name is Olivia Johnson. When she arrived there, they said, "Oh my God, you're a woman." She applied for the job by telex. She thought he was an Oliver and she's supposed to sling beer on Friday night in the pub. Well, mom said, I'm staying there. I'm staying here until I got to pay off all the debt. So they said, okay. So they put her up in the hotel. The first day she made homemade bread for the miners' lunches. The next day she made cinnamon buns. Then she made lemon meringue pie. They said, you're hired. We'll get somebody else. Meanwhile, my dad was mining an El Dorado mine. And although they had minimal writing skills, his sister had said, you know, Olive, whom he'd met in the fish camp, is working in a mining town. Oh my God, my dad. My dad was up on, Great Slave Lake. But he managed to get by Red Lake by walking roads and canoes and to find my mom, and they got married, and I'm the first child, and we had a wonderful life. And lots of Scandinavian people there. Okay, so I've been raised very Scandinavian.
So tell me a little bit about the association.
We're a club within the Scandinavian Center that consists of all the Nordic countries, Finland, Norway, Sweden, Iceland, and Denmark. And the Swedish Cultural Association is an organization of people of Swedish descent or those interested in our Swedish culture. And we function for food, fun, fellowship, and to keep contact with Sweden and celebrate our culture, celebrate our ancestors and our heritage, and seize every opportunity to connect with other Swedes. Now, one of the things that has been a major initiative as a result of our studying our immigration and a book that was written about the Swedes of Canada, the Swedes, when they immigrated here in the 1800s and 1900s, they were content any place. You just give them some snuff and a saw or an axe, and they're happy in the bush. Okay, so they settled all over the place. Okay, so what we decided, we're going to go visit them. Okay, and we're going to bring our food and our dancing and our singing and our stories. And we started in Eriksdale, and we've gone now to six different places: Eriksdale, Meadows, Sprague, Lactobonny, Lacloo. And each time we bring the maypole and we dance around the maypole, we bring the big dollar horse, we parade around with it, tell our stories, eat our food, and get the Swedes out of the woodpile, I say. And we've all got that basic feeling like we're suddenly like we're relatives by virtue of getting together with our music. Okay, we've got a band that we take with us too, with our food, with our stories, our way of being that is just so Swedish. And it's such a good feeling. Anyway, so we've done that and had a wonderful time.
So you mentioned you were raised with the Scandinavian culture. Maybe go into brief detail exactly what that all entails. What exactly is that for people who are living here in Canada or other cultures? What exactly does Scandinavian all mean?
We like to work hard and we like to play hard. And well, they've got a heavy dose of perseverance. The Finns call it sisu. but we just do it and the job gets done. And like adventure and challenges, natural, our like favorite thing is to pick mushrooms and blueberries and swim and be out in nature, and be out in nature, summer or winter. You know, there's no such thing as bad weather. It's another adventure. And like to get together and tell stories and tell stories. And I was raised that way with the different prospectors and the different Swedes that would meet at our place, hear all the stories. And my mom is Icelandic. And the Icelanders, oh my God, they really love to get together. And again, tell the stories and eat the food and have the music and sing. It's a wonderful way to live.
I was just going to ask, do you find it difficult at all to connect with, you know, a culture that's like a whole ocean away?
No, it's in me. Even like the culture we experienced here, I've been to Sweden 3 times. I've been to Iceland 5 times. I've been there. It's different than what we experienced here. okay, because of our ancestors, but there's similarities also, okay? Like, that's the new country. We're kind of the old country. Vinatart is a good example of that. Like, we make Vinatart here, but they don't make it there. there are certain things that we do, like, I'm just talking about food. Books is another. Mushroom picking, the foods, oh my God, the foods, the herrings, you know, the lutefisk, the gravlaxes, the breads, the cookies. It's just in us, okay? And to live off fish and nature, okay? Like reindeer and deer meat is sacred there. It's in my family. Every time it's a celebration. You know, that's what we brought with us from there.
There's part Scandinavian culture here in Canada and then part over there. It still meshes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been there and I stood on the rocks and I there's something in my soul about being there. The only thing I could say, there's cell memory. The Indigenous people say we have seven generations in us, so seven generations in my soul, in my cells, and that's what we do in our club, try and get those cell memories going, get people on fire about it. Because when you get together with your own culture, there's just, we bond. It's unbelievable. It's a feeling that's very special. And I keep saying in our Swedish club, I'm so grateful that we've got to know one another. There's something so special here. We're so lucky we have this culture for us to be a part of enriching our lives.
And the organization right now, they're celebrating all of this culture in a virtual form. Tell me a little bit about that.
Right. Isn't that great? Well, we were going to have to celebrate Manitoba 150. We were going to have a big celebration, and then COVID hit, okay? And we'd applied for a grant, so we got the grant. So they said if we could use some of the grant, we could carry it over to next year. So we decided to do a virtual. And meanwhile, okay, as part of our Swedes on Wheels, our party on wheels, we were going to these different places and collecting story. And we decided for Manitoba 150, we're going to take those stories and put it on our webpage, and during COVID send one each month to our members. Mm-hmm. Okay. And from that grew the idea, let's all the clubs do that. And it could be part of our virtual history museum. So that's what's on our webpage now, are those stories. And it's a way of keeping them recorded. It's a one way of sharing them. We've discovered so many things that, I mean, well, the Swedes and the Icelanders, they've all done. And we're all in this party together.
Of course. Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Is there any like songs or foods? And you were mentioning something about a Christmas tradition that kind of speaks out to you and is very close to your heart.
Oh, lots. Okay. Well, Lucia is coming up. So we're doing Lucia virtual. Like, you know, Lucia is a lighting, celebrating the darkness. Like one thing when I was in Sweden, they celebrate the darkness. Okay. And it's a time, well, there's different words for it. Hugi, Lugum, you know, they call for coming in, reflecting, meditating, and also partying. And so we celebrate that with Lucia. And Lucia is on the, Lucia is on the 13th of December, the darkest day of the year, and with candles in her hair, singing Santa Lucia. And we have a train of kids in these white outfits with their little candles, all singing in Swedish. Some of them are only 4 years old and they're singing it in Swedish. And of course, we all come to celebrate it. This is bringing light at this time of darkness. And also Lucia also would, the oldest in the family, with the candles in her, brings hot chocolate or coffee and Lucia buns to the oldest people in the family and all the family. They have a special breakfast, and then they go out to the streets and the schools and celebrate bringing light at this darkest time of the year. And in addition to that, we have a party at the center for this, and we all dance around the Christmas tree and sing our songs and eat our food and, you know, pepakaka, glug, you know, all those things that are special to celebrate this time of year. Similarly, we celebrate the brightest time of the year, midsummer. And midsummer is usually out at Basilan, or we take the Dala horse and the maypole with us, and we pick wildflowers and you make a garland for your hair, you make a garland for the maypole, and then we all go and dance around the maypole because we're celebrating now that summer is here. Let's get out and enjoy the light of midsummer. And with
it really sounds like this culture community is just ingrained.
We're trying to keep it alive. People from Sweden have said, in some ways, we're more alive with these traditions than they are in Sweden. And that makes us happy because it's something that's we've held on to. Like my mom and dad and my grandma, when they first arrived, they'd go to the midsummer, okay? And I heard about it. And so since I've been part of the club here, we've been doing it here. I've been doing it for, I guess, about 60 years now. And it's a wonderful way of connecting. It's such a wonderful feeling, picking the wildflowers, making the garlands, you know, listening to the music again, playing the music, dancing, being just fun-loving. It's all fun-loving.
Oh, that's amazing. Is there any other stories that you would like to share from your culture, or maybe some interesting things that have happened at the association?
Well, of course, we celebrate Folklorama. I think one of the big things is when we went to Kenora with our big Dala horse on a trailer and with all our, we made all our own costumes, okay? We got our cultural costumes. That's everything, okay, I think one of the things is whatever we do, we all get together and do it and we work, but it becomes play. Like we made all those costumes and we had so much fun doing it, okay? Okay, what's that? Going to Loch Loop, these road trips and going to Loch Tabani, I tell you, with our maple and Noma, at Loch Tabani, okay, it was pouring rain and we had the maple. Well, we had to go inside the Pioneer Club. We had a beautiful log cabin. We were going to be outside. And you always decorate with birch trees at the entrance for midsummer. Okay, so we had them there with our flags. And it's pouring rain and windy. We can't go out. I went and I grabbed that birch tree. I hung out. It became the maypole. Everybody danced around. Everybody took turns hanging onto it. We had so much fun. I don't know if there's any one story. We've had so much fun. We're proud of the stories too.
Well, of course, you need to be able to celebrate and get excited about, you know, history, heritage, as well as just the stories that you create with friends and family.
Yeah, we're creating. Okay, we love to get together and make things. We have sewing bees and we make our Dala horses. We make our tomtas. We knit together, Lavika mitts, you know. When we get together, we got to be doing something. Eating or...
Keep yourselves busy.
One of the things is, when I went to Sweden, I insisted I was going in the wintertime because my whole family skied. I was born with skis, and I wanted to go there in the wintertime. It's 30 below, but they're out there bare hands, you know, with their Christmas market or their winter market selling stuff. And they're used to it. There's no wind. But anyway, I went to the bakery and I saw these buns. Oh my God, they were so gorgeous. Well, I found out that they're the fat day buns. They're semla buns. They take the inside out. They put marzipan in with inside of the bun and whipped cream. Okay. The top of it with whipped cream. Oh, ooh. It's to die for. So I decide I'm bringing that back to Canada. We're going to make the semla buns and we're going to have the semla bun. Oh, we do every year. And it's so good.
Sounds delicious, just you describing it. And you mentioned even the younger generation has been getting involved in some of these traditions and things. You gain the young kids as young as four singing and taking part.
Oh yeah, well that's Lucia. You know, it's so much a part. That's particular a Swedish people. Okay, and although we're not having Lucia this year, we're going to do it virtual. They'll be still doing it. Like if you start singing those songs at a young enough age, by the time you're 12, you're Lucia and you can really sing it. And one of the girls, like one of the girls that sings Wonderful, Wonderful Copenhagen, she's now an opera singer, but she started singing Lucia. And like to sing Lucia is very, very beautiful. And the violin player is also one of our Swedish girls. And they get to express their gifts through thing events like Folklorama, Lucia, those different events that we have. Mm-hmm. This summer, because of COVID, I got the Swedish or the Scandinavian band out in our park out here. Mm-hmm. Got everybody here. Come on, we're gonna have a outdoor concert. So we did, and then I found an accordion player. Music makes it. I found an accordion. He loves to play. I got him here, and I had everybody in the park for a lunch. You know. Food and fellowship and music. I've just created a Yukmuk reindeer dance, and it's on our YouTube. Okay, right. And I've got a 97-year-old friend, a Swedish friend. Okay, and she's even doing it. This 97 Gunvor Larsson is a lady to be reckoned with. And she has just won Manitoba 150, one of the 150 Manitobas that are being celebrated. She's our matriarch. She's our guide. A wonderful, wonderful person. And she's all of us after, so keep doing more.
Tune in to UMFM every Tuesday afternoon at 1 to hear more stories from amazing people across Canada. I'm your host, Ryan Funk. You're on U Talk. And have yourself a good one.